A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, it's the Luke and Pete Shaw Thursday edition. I hope you had an excellent Wednesday, Tuesday, and rest of Monday. My name is Pete Donaldson, and I'm joined by a man by the name of...
Luke Aaron Moore.
Yes, we're looking at a 1.5 second delay on the old latency on the recording. So that's the sort of thing you're going to be expecting right throughout the show.
It'll be edited, Pete.
Oh, well, it might be. I mean, if I was the person who's editing, I would have done it for the first few weeks, made a good show of it, then just let him get on with it for the rest
and
of
that's
it.
And that's just only part of the reason why you're not doing it anymore. What have you been up to this week, Peter?
Oh, I've been doing loads of stuff. I do occasionally a voiceover for a Discovery Channel derivative, D-Max, and a lot of the shows are about traveling or living life off-grid for a certain amount of time, 21 days off-grid and naked and afraid and living in places like Alaska. One place that some TV show journeyed to is a place in Argentina called Tierra del Fuego, which is obviously Land of Fire. And I was going, Land of Fire, it's 500 miles from Antarctica. What the fuck's going on here? Why? And I Googled it, and a man called Ferdinand Magellan, who on passing the archipelago in 1520, spotted a number of fires burning along the coastline. So he called it Land of Fire when, as I've said, it's 500 miles from Antarctica, so it's fucking freezing all of the time, the year round. So can we, like... Just people who are not necessarily discovering it, or they just go past it and describe it. At some point, can we not just sort of go, this is a wholly inconsequential and silly name for this part of the world. Let's call it something else. Fuck Ferdinand Magellan. I don't know who he was. I'm sure he was very important. But just because he was a bit paranoid about some fires burning along the coastline, you cannot call a place the Land of Fire when it is its high point is like 7 degrees.
What would you call it?
Brrr.
I reckon he's just been ironic, mate.
He's just an absolute roaster, isn't he? He's just having an absolute giggle.
Yeah.
1520, and we're still using that. Land of Fire. Piss off.
Yeah, I mean, place names is an interesting thing because they tend to never.
And that's
really...
That's why they don't deserve the Falklands, Luke. That's all I'm saying.
That's why they never really change. They never really change. We never really change, like place names never really. Kind of change, they kind of evolve, don't they? So the town I'm from, Gosport, that I think that used to be called God's Port, right?
Nice,
but it's
like that,
evolved, and it's the same where I live. The area I live in, London, Norwood, that used to be called Northwood. So do change slightly. They evolve, but you're not really gonna get a kind of a groundswell of support for changing Tierra del Fuego to something completely different. It's just not going to happen. 500 years, mate. You're not going to change it now.
Just be clever about it.
And you know this, Pete, as much as anyone else, because you obviously famously tried to rebrand yourself PD, and that didn't work.
It did, kind of. I mean, you've been trying really hard to rebrand me as Hamster. What's his name? Out of Top Gear.
Richard Hammond.
Richard Hammond this week. Yeah. Luke said that me, Luke, and another member of our company are like the lads from Top Gear. But the problem is... you may think you may have scored a direct hit on me, Luke, but I genuinely don't have much reference for him other than he keeps rolling his cars and nearly killing himself. So I just need a little bit more. He did a science program, didn't he? I don't know enough about Hamster. I'm inviting you in. Let me tell me what he's all about so I can be angry about you calling me Hamster from Top Gear.
Little fella.
Little fella, number yeah. All right, fair. Yeah.
Questionable facial hair.
All right, I'll take that.
Holding on to hair longer than he should for his age.
Okay, right, yeah,
style.
Yeah.
Dreadfully consistent waistcoat wearer.
Okay, I don't wear a lot of waistcoats. So I've,
well, you you've say gone, that, come on.
We've gone four down, and I'm stopping you right there.
No, I think you wear more waistcoats than anyone else I know.
I've not worn a waistcoat in quite a long time, simply because I've put on weight since I've worn all my waistcoats. My suits have become a lot smaller on me.
Okay, in this situation, by the way, I was also, you should probably point out to everyone that I was self-deprecating enough to say that I was James May, who is like quite tragic. So, I mean,
why is he quite tragic? Why would you not go for the big bopper? What's his name?
Yeah, I'm not racist enough for Clarkson. I'm genuinely not a racist. I'm genuinely a very tolerant person. So
I don't think he is. I don't think anyone who has this kind of like that kind of reputation, you know, the Clarksons, these are the fellows on Good Morning Britain. These kind of like men who are confused about the world as it is. And, yeah, and they think that everyone should just, you know, buck their own ideas up and just and grow up and all that shit. Like, they don't believe that. They're saying that for money. So
yeah, that's true.
I don't think any of them are. Yeah, they're not stupid enough to be that racist. They just think they can get a rise, and they think they're being naughty by doing it.
Could I just say the biggest insult you could have paid Piers Morgan there was forgetting his name, which you did. So he would be fuming about that. Absolutely,
yes.
Fuming. But the thing is, Jeremy Clarkson also punched a producer, and I would never ever do that. So I mean, I it didn't really fit for me. That's all.
Oh, I don't punch producers. Look at you, special bro.
And they also don't wear jeans like he does.
No, I guess not. I bet they've got lovely houses. I bet all three of them have lovely bloody
houses. But Pete, one of the best ever send-ups of Clarkson, by the way, is in an episode of the Steve Coogan, perennially underrated comedy vehicle, Saxondale, where he goes to a classic car show, and he becomes friends with a Clarkson-type character played amazingly by Alexander Armstrong. It's a brilliant satire of the Jeremy Clarkson and his ilk. It's well worth a watch. But when do you think that, because you and I, we're approaching a certain age, those kind of jeans that Clarkson wears and the look that he has, when do you think you and I will get to that stage? Because I think you're going to be Hammond. That's what I'm saying. You'll get to that stage and you'll start dressing exactly like Hammond.
But the problem is, I've not worn jeans for the last 10 years. So, like, I just, I'm a jeans opter outer. So, I think that when I start wearing jeans, I'll be saying to everyone, look, I've not worn jeans for 10 years. You've all been having your fun with jeans, all right? So, I'm getting me Marks and Sparks on. So, give me some respect, yeah? I'm enjoying.
Well, calling it Marks and Sparks is a real sign.
Not wrong with that.
Speaking of sartorial challenges, check out the link I've just put in the little recording session there, because I really want you to look at something and get. I want your take on it. So there'll be plenty of people out there who don't know this, and I didn't know this until yesterday when I was reading around it, that there's going to be a NASA SpaceX launch on Wednesday. Actually, at time recording, it may or may not have already happened because of when we're recording. So but it depends on the weather. So anyway, long story short, at some point, weather dependent, there's going to be an historic mission where a couple of astronauts are going to fly to the International Space Station, and they're going to do it in the SpaceX Falcon rocket, right? And the Crew Dragon, that thing that Elon Musk is involved in. Anyway, so that's the background. Pete, that link I've sent you, scroll down to the middle of it. Look at look at the astronaut outfits they now wear.
Spacesuits.
They look completely different.
They look like Lego clothes. The helmets are so small. And the it looks like they've put, you know, like Smithy, the terrible like kind of 10 quid fancy dress Halloween costume makers.
Yeah.
It looks like they've bought it off that.
Also, the guy on the right, Pete, really looks like Dom Jolly.
Matt Damon. Oh, okay. Yeah. It's somewhere in between that, too.
Matt Damon.
Fantastic.
That's generous.
Benken. His name is Benken. Hurley and Benken. They're all now but done with all of their preparations. Look at, worse than that, actually, are they? Oh, they're not in the rocket there. I thought, wow, that's a really, the car that they're in looked really, I thought they were in a car, but no, that might actually be the rocket.
I think they will be, though. It's called an Astrovan, isn't it?
But their chairs look like gaming chairs. Yeah. I've got one of them.
It's all very kind of what's the word I'm looking for? It's all very kind of streamlined and minimalist, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I guess all of like the technology's kind of like come on so much that you know, obviously was there some pressure situation with the old ones in the 60s and the 70s that meant that they had to be really, really bulky, and obviously like maneuverability, space is at a premium. Oh man, I'm excited. Look at and more than anything else, like you're looking at these guys using like new technology rather than like obviously rockets get built like 20 years before they're needed. So the technology that's in place now and the stuff that's up there on the space station was put together, you know, decades ago. So like looking at them using like flat panel LCD screens is just so exciting. Cool. It just looks like they've used their space way more better. Way more better.
I also find it exciting because it looks like what I imagined it to look like when I was a kid, finally. Mm. And secondly, that paradox thing about how because of the time and the processes involved, that technology becomes quite outdated. I find that interesting when you think about really long distances. So for example, if they got sign off on a crewed mission to say something that's 25 years travel away, right? So they do one of those things like you see on some of those Ridley Scott movies, like the newer Alien films or whatever, and there's a crew there and they're or maybe they're a family or a group of professionals that know that they're going to have to live together for like 25 years. What's to say that like in 10 years' time, there isn't the technology to get them there in like 5 years, which will overtake the original one?
Yes.
And making the original one pointless. It's weird.
They'll be waiting there with space guns.
Upsetting. How gutted would you be if you signed up to a 25-year space mission and when you finally got there, loads of people were already there? All right.
Yeah. We? With space lasers to blow them up. You're not needed. Your idea's outmoded. You're dangerous. But yeah. One of the most worrying things is they've got like a mission control shot that NASA has provided of the two space guys, I'm going to call them, in Saturday's dress rehearsal. They're watching it on a video stream that's hosted in a fucking Chrome browser. That's the worrying thing for me. This man who's running the whole system.
What would you be using?
Well, I mean, you'd hope it would be bespoke, wouldn't you? That you wouldn't be watching a video feed from fucking Google Chrome. But clearly they are. I mean, that part of the mission is clearly not as sensitive as the other stuff. But yeah.
This is your area, but surely they'd have like certain plugins and security and maybe it's just like statistically, it's just the most reliable browser, right?
It's just, yeah, but like, why does it need to be, why is he using an internet browser to watch a video feed of a man in space? That's the worrying thing. Like,
what should he be using?
Doesn't need
a camcorder.
Doesn't need to come through that. I'd be worried that, I don't know, there'd be something goes wrong with the encoder, the footage gets hacked and it gets replaced by a Formula One e-gamer. Something goes wrong. Somebody types in the wrong Twitch details.
Here's one for you, right? So there was a great BBC podcast series. I think it's called 13 Minutes to the Moon. It's all about the space race of the 60s and mission control and NASA and all that kind of stuff. And I think I'm right in saying that in that era, the average age of a mission control operative was 24 years old, right?
Right.
Imagine a 24-year-old Luke Moore and a 24-year-old Pete Donaldson given jobs there. My God.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be horrendous.
We'd have hangovers. We'd each have a bottle of Mets. As we tell everyone to get out of the space capsule. To be honest though, everything's probably automated now, so it's probably just one button. There you go. Get fuck off to space now. Bye.
Yeah,
probably no worries.
Let us know when you get there. Give us three rings when you get there.
See you later.
By the way, Pete, also, it is worth pointing out that the official Luke and Pete show tarantula, Little John, there's a picture of him been sent in by Alex Robson, who is the owner of the official Luke and Pete show Tarantula. Pete, I'm not telling you the story. I'm not telling you Little John's origin story yet again. But on our Twitter, Alex Robson shared a picture of him having a lovely little walk around on a Karate Kid themed plate, which is very enjoyable. I'm going to send you that
original
link as well
or,
right now. Have a look at that.
Original recolored. So look, Alex T. Robson. Let's have a look. Oh, that's
he's
a
little, isn't he?
Plate.
He's a little fella.
Has he put the plate in with the tarantula so the tarantula can enjoy a beautiful silhouette image of two guys having a bit of a scrap? It's more of a ball, more of a Karate Kid ball, I'd say, than plate. Yeah. But lovely little chap. stretching his legs, ready for Clastron Town on Monday. Did he shed his skin? Was that the story, I seem to recall?
The story was, I think, that due to a translation error, his friend sent him a real tarantula when he thought he was supposed to send him some fake ones.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
I think that's it anyway. It's great stuff. And finally, Pete, before we go to a break and then we'll do some emails, I keep meaning to ask you this and I always forget, so now I'm going to finally do it. Have you seen any of the BBC comedy series This Country?
I've not, no. No, you texted and recommended it to me, but it's one of those things like People Do Nothing and a couple of other things, and Ozark. I just think I've come in too late. I won't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I mean, Ozark is very different to those. But but This Country, I absolutely love. I watched the first couple of episodes a while back, and I was like, oh, it's all right. And my friends were like, no, stick with it. And now I just think it's so, so good. I absolutely love it. I can't get enough of it. So I would recommend it if those people out there who haven't watched it, definitely give it a bash.
I've seen one of the characters from that particular TV show was in the film Michael Winterbottom's Greed, which I watched last week.
Oh, with Steve Coogan.
Yeah, what a mess that film ends up as. My word. Starts
not very good.
Really starts excellently and then just goes really downhill. The main protagonist obviously very unlikable, but there's no redemption arc. There's not even a particular nobody's pleasant, and it's just a mess. The whole conceit of how he meets his end is a mess, and the politics of Sri Lankan and Chinese disposable fashion creation is handled really heavily, and like as heavily as it possibly could be in a film where it's actually, you know, they steal a gag from Partridge about Bono, you know, not paying any tax and wandering around with his mum's with his nan's cataract glasses or whatever.
Yeah,
like it was so badly done, I thought, and I don't know. So Pete, really terrible projects to do.
The only thing I remember of it is that there was a big controversy around the censorship of it by Sony, wasn't there? So maybe that's got something to do with it.
Yeah, well, maybe it was. What was it? What was this? The censorship, like it just changed the.
I can't remember. I just remember seeing a news.
I'll have to read up on it. Interesting. Oh well, there you go. Well, let's get into some emails after a short break, shall we?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And we're back on the Luke and Pete show. Kelsey Christmas has just tweeted in saying, I think you're talking about Welks in your latest Luke and Pete podcast. I don't remember talking about Welks, Luke. I can't remember what we were when we ever talked about any kind of shellfish, but not a shelled animal. But
can you talk about a penis fish last week?
Oh, no. I don't think, no, it's not like a, no, but this, oh, okay, Kelsey, I'll address you out directly, Kelsey. These things are massive. Like, they're big, fat, clam things that look a bit sluggy. Whelks are tiny, aren't they? Like, my dad used to eat whelks.
Yeah.
Little boys, little guys. Or maybe they do have giant whelks. Maybe Kelsey can provide some kind of proof. I don't know. But I don't think they're whelks, but they could be. And that is where we will leave that. If you're watching, hello at logopeteshow.com.
Yeah, and someone who's done that is Martin Larsen of Copenhagen. Very nice to hear from a Danish listener. Great stuff. He puts this out to the group, and Pete, I'll put it to you. He just says, how many holes does a straw have? 0, 1, or 2? The internet can't figure it out, so I've done what any sane person would do. Ask the Luke and the Pete. Keep up the good work, Martin. So what do you make of that?
It is effect. It's got one hole.
Really?
That's what it's got. If you say like you extrude a flat plane that has some three-dimensional capacity. Say like if you cut a straw down to like half a millimeter. It's basically just a circle in a flat bit of plastic, isn't it? Really.
Mm.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
So therefore, there's still some thickness in the plastic around the hole. So it is a flat. It's effectively a flat piece of plastic with one hole. Just because it's extruded tall, I think it's still got. I think that still counts as one single hole.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, the only way to have two holes is if you put a hole in the straw itself, then the side of it or whatever.
If you put, if you would have to put a hole through the other side, or you know.
Why would people say that? Why would people argue that it has zero holes?
Because it's a pipe, and does a pipe necessarily have a hole?
Yeah.
Is there anything punctured? I mean, the way it's produced, obviously, there's no puncturing happening, so a hole is not created. But by virtue of the fact it resembles a hole, it is a hole.
I think you could then argue that then, for example, if straws are made from one continuous long pipe of plastic, then the entirety of all the straws in existence that came from that one piece only have one hole. So therefore, the section of the straw you're using has zero holes because it's just an extension of the big overall thing that it's cut from.
What? But which straw has the hole then?
Well, the main piece of plastic that started. So because your logic is that if you reduce it right down to a tiny, tiny fraction of its size, it's just a hole, right? But what I'm saying is
it's a piece of plastic with a hole in it.
But if I elongate the whole thing so it's hundreds of miles long and cut straws off it, am I creating extra single holes there? Or because that's now a new thing, but you're saying it's part of a bigger thing with one hole in total.
Each entity would have its own hole. It's a piece of plastic with one hole.
So you're
hole.
Creating Actually, holes just by cutting it, ironically.
Thinking
that's
about
weird.
It, though, you're extruding plastic, so you're heating plastic and stretching it along a thing. I'm not really sure how straws are made, but I presume it's something like that. You are to cut a circle out of a piece of plastic, you are making one hole. But then to cut the outside dimension of the extruded plastic. You're also cutting another hole in many ways. So there's kind of two holes.
Oh, there we go. Oh, God. The answer, Martin, is actually 0, 1, and 2. That's the answer.
I've taught myself out of my. Can we go back to Welks, please?
Yeah.
Can we go back to Welks?
Yeah, very nice.
Oh, yeah. We just had an email in that is way too long, but I'll try and cut it down as much as I can. But I quite like the idea of reading out an email that has literally just come in 5 minutes ago from Jamie Reed. Is that all right?
Yeah, go ahead, mate. You fill your boots. Yeah.
I'm back to derail your whimsical podcast with theoretical physics once again. The idea behind Schrodinger's cat is, as you described, pretty much there's a cat in a sealed box which will die at some random point. So until you open that box, we don't know whether it's alive or dead. But what makes this so interesting that in classical macrophysics, the cat is alive or it is dead. We just don't know which until we open the box. But in quantum physics, the cat is both alive and dead until we open the box. It's alive and dead at the same time. It's in a quantum superposition of two states. Everything has to make a decision in classical physics. It's either a solid particle or a wave. A cat is either alive or dead in quantum physics. It doesn't need to make a decision until we force it to. I'm going to leave that there because the email goes on for a lot longer than that. Jamie, thank you for clearing it up in a pithy and a short manner, even though I made it shorter than it probably needed to be.
I would, I'll probably go and read that email just for my own pleasure later.
I think so, yes.
Because I think there's a certain element to Schrodinger's cat where you have sort of subatomic particles and like I think it's like decaying uranium atoms or something that either poison the cat or don't. And so that's how you get to the superstate, I think. But anyway, that's a digression. What about this from Oliver, who is also emailed hello@lukeandpeteshow.com. He says, hello, I'm way behind on this email, but I thought you guys might want to hear about the maddest thing I found in my attic, as it's pretty weird. Ooh, in my loft, I found the previous owners of my house.
What? Right? Oh, right, yes.
I bought this house 12 months ago as a repossession where it was sold as seen, so I have no idea of the history of the house or the previous tenants. I did find out a lot, though, when I got up into the loft to find old postcards, books, and the ashes of both the previous owners, husband and wife.
No.
The husband died in the 70s. The wife died only a few years ago. I had no idea why they'd been left up there. I don't know what to do with them. I've spoken to the neighbours, the solicitors, and the local crematorium, and short of telling me about some family rift, they can't help with anything. Any ideas greatly appreciated. Hopefully we'll get them back to the family if they want them. But if not, we'll eventually put them in the garden where they hopefully spent many happy years. Very
so sad.
Weird situation. How do they even make it up into the
exactly? It's not murder suicide, is it? I mean, how did they both get up there? So somebody must have went, I don't need them downstairs, let's put them in the loft. So confusing. Yeah. Like, a fascinating story. And presumably, a rather upsetting story.
Also, how does he know that the ashes are who they say they are?
Yeah.
Who he assumes they are. Because unless they're labelled, he won't know, will he? Could be anyone.
Yeah. Oh, God, would you want it labelled? Or would you want it to be unlabelled? I don't know. Surely there's on an urn, there would be a little message saying, you know, this is so-and-so, in the same way that a grave would be.
The local funeral director's down the road from me. You can make ashes into like jewellery and stuff.
Oh, nice. You can wear them out and about.
Yeah.
Out on the town.
Pete, would you be happy for me to wear you after you die?
I'd choose the hand you weren't using for masturbation. I'd find that.
No, I was thinking of like a Prince Albert.
Yes. Then I know it would be untouched by any humans. They could put me back together later on. I watched Jurassic Park for the first time in about 25 years.
It's on TV, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yesterday, yeah. I don't remember any of that film. I remember the Tyrannosaurus Rex's big eye.
Did you enjoy it?
And I remember the raptors in the kitchen. I did, but the pre-bit where the fat man got a nana, you didn't say the magic word,
Dennis
guy.
Nedry,
Dennis Nedrin. He
Nedry.
I forgot. Nedry. All right.
Nedry.
Nedrin, I said. Nedry. He goes to steal some animals.
Embryos.
And he ends up dying because he's been a shit. But it seemed like you'd think that they would be running they must have been running over budget and over time, because they start doing the tours way too early. Because this,
I agree, with his own family
quickly.
As well. Mad.
I know. Damn. Yeah. Which is backwards, but yeah, I like, very enjoyable. I can see why I loved it when I was a kid, because I truly did. But I all of the references and all of the because obviously the Football Ramble Daily, we have in the past, you know, a clever girl, all of these kind of quotes from it. I kind of remember it from the film, but watching them actually, you know, being spoken by the actors, I was like, oh, it's a pastiche of the old Football Ramble there.
It's iconic when Bob Peck playing Robert Muldoon goes, clever girl. That's iconic. But Pete, one thing I'd be really interested to get your take on, because you're a man who loves a bit of tech and all this type
right,
of stuff.
Yeah.
Don't you think that the special effects stand up really well?
Yeah, they really do, and it's all about the lighting. The thing that the doesn't, it's that idea of like this futuristic how you would access a system.
Yeah, that doesn't work. That's really like, dated. So, yeah.
It's a Unix system. I know these. I know how to work these or something. And it floats down. Right, they're trying to lock the door, and she has to wait until she floats down to that bit of the memory that so she can click on it and lock all the doors and get the security back up and running. But no, that's the thing. You watch like 3D stuff made even now, and some of it's like worse than stuff you would see back in the day. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
You look at a film like The Mummy, which I presume was released a little while after that. The Rock, The Rock's character, is he the Scorpion King? When he comes out, he looks awful the way they've done him. He barely looks like The Rock. The skin doesn't look realistic. I quite like a YouTube series where they get CGI professionals to go back to see like bad CGI and also good CGI, and they've always got like the utmost of respect for any people working in the special effects industry. But you look at like what was it, ILM, was it Industrial Light and Magic doing just about stuff like that. They sort of respect, because obviously they were the first people to do it like that, and how they were able to integrate the dinosaurs into the scene when the raptors are running around the kitchen and the pots are going flying and stuff. I was watching it. I was like going, to be honest, I've seen like the last Jurassic Park do that worse. The way that the pots are going flying around and stuff. I was really surprised how well it sort of stood up. So, yeah.
It's a combination of... I think it's a combination of, like, properly, really well-done puppets and...
Yes,
And CGI, to the point where I think they wanted to get it to where you couldn't tell which was which, basically.
Mm.
But help me out. You might not be able to answer this, because as a layman, and I'm not anywhere near as interested in this kind of stuff as you... What is the problem with, so for example, why does bad CGI look so bad and good CGI look so good? Is it a question of budget or time to work on it or the skill of the artist or all those things? What?
Oh, I think it's a multitude of reasons. Timing. I know a guy who does a lot of work in this industry, and they can spend like a certain amount of time creating, for example, and I'll use the example that he used, Arnold Schwarzenegger for one of the previous Terminator films. And they create this incredible, accurate Arnold Schwarzenegger 3D model, which is beautiful, down to his fucking fingernails. It looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger. It smells like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then they hand that model over to someone else, and he does all the lighting and he does all the compositing and he puts them in the scenes with the other actors. And if they don't do that right, if they don't get the lighting right, or they're not as good and not as gifted as the people who created the model in the first place, you can make a primo model of someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger or a beautiful construction. You can turn it into shit because you don't have the same skills or your level of compositing is not as good
metaphor
as
for this, really, isn't it? Himself.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, we spent Monday watching or Sunday night watching Goal 3, the final episode of the Goal trilogy on Football Ramble Daily, and the compositing of World Cup footage with actors on a blue screen, green screen, is so kind of, it's so poor. But to be honest, that's hard to do with the very best of them. So to ask someone to do that on a budget, seemingly on a fucking iPhone app, like, just seems incredible. Like, you would, like, there are certain apps that you can, you know, stuff like deepfakes and stuff that you can actually access on your mobile phone nowadays, and augmented like reality and stuff. You know, you can put little dinosaurs and little characters in scenes and stuff. That motion tracking, you know, 20 years ago would have been like unheard of, and now you can do it with a processor that sits inside a, you know, a 5-inch block of silicon that you carry around in your pocket. It's
thermal paste.
Unseemly. Say again, thermal paste.
Yeah, Pete. Probably. So can I just say that, because I would have put my I wouldn't put my mortgage on it, but I would have, if someone said to me, Pete Donaldson's going to go and watch Jurassic Park for the first time in 20 years tonight, and what do you think he'll say about it? I would have bet that you said that you didn't like it, but you actually did like it.
No, I liked it when I was a kid. I loved the music.
My wife walked down the aisle to that music. You know that?
Beautiful. Did you as well? Oh, no.
I was already standing there.
Oh, you were already there, weren't you?
Yeah.
Did you walk?
Yeah.
Did you go, she arrived?
I said, we're being hunted.
Clever
but you
girl.
Liked it though, you enjoyed it.
Stupid girl.
Yeah.
foolish girl, if anything. I really liked it. What a film. What a film, and what a production. And
go back and watch Jaws next, Pete, see if you like that.
Never heard of it, mate.
It's a film about an otter. All right, let's go. Let's get out of here. That's enough time for this week. We'll be back on Monday, of course, with another episode of this. I hope you agree. Excellent nonsense. Do leave us a review if you enjoyed the show and tell your friends about it as well. Mm. It's just me and Pete chatting crap for half an hour twice a week,
but it
seems to work okay. Pete, thank you very much, as ever, for your company. Thanks to everyone for listening as well. If you want to get in touch, it's hello@lukeandpeteshow.com. You can get in touch on Twitter as well, @lukeandpeteshow. I'm going to go because my cat is scratching at the door, because ever since lockdown, all he wants to do is go in and out of closed doors. I'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. Scratch, scratch.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.